Rock Central Thursday. It is Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main, side, and drink for only $15, served in 20 minutes or less. Sat, as Justin Timberlake said, it's going to be May, and it is May.
Okay, yeah.
And the Vancouver Whitecaps have advanced to the CONCACAF Champions League final. Champions Cup final. They change the name every year.
Yeah, I mean, it just comes down to branding, I suppose.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of Champions League.
The reason I bring this up most is because I was very, I was down in the dumps yesterday.
You were? You know? Because of the Canucks?
The Canucks continuously just not giving us good news stories to talk about right now.
The Jays actually winning?
Well, during the show, it was 6-0 for the Boston Red Sox. And I was like, maybe the Jays will never get a hit. Hey, look at another team hitting home runs. That's kind of fun. Next thing you know.
The fun happened.
The fun started to happen. You get Jays hitting bombs. And then Santander, who I was chirping the whole night, ends up hitting a 3-run bomb, and the Jays win it 7-6 in 10 innings. And then the Whitecaps do the business on Lionel Messi.
Yeah.
Like, just dominant. Completely had Lionel Messi, the greatest soccer player of all time, in their pockets.
And they've been the top team in MLS, and they're going to be the top. I mean, we can't say they're going to win the final, but are they going to go in there as a favorites?
It's tough to go in, especially if they play in Mexico against Cruz Azul or Tigres.
Yes.
But it'll be tough to be a favorite in that one, as much as the Cinderella run has been impressive. In any case, I mean, only one other MLS team has won the CONCACAF Champions League in recent memory. It was the Seattle Sounders a couple of years ago. Toronto and Montreal have both been to a final, but they haven't won. So now it's Vancouver's chance.
So should be the first Canadian team to do so.
It would be great.
Let's do it.
It would be great. I am team Jesper Sorensen.
Okay. Let's go Sorensen.
Just like Josh, I want him to coach the Vancouver Canucks as well.
Can he?
I mean, it's pretty impressive.
I mean, he
seems
might.
To like to stay on the attack even with a lead.
Yeah, well, are you trying to say something? Are you trying to say that
I'm moving on from Rick Tocchet's ad, okay?
So now you're blaming Rick Tocchet.
I'm like, thinking about the old relationship, and I'm thinking about all the bad things about the relationship.
Reach went from defending Tocchet to being like, you know what? His brand of hockey, not that good anyways. Not that good. Sorensen, step up.
Yeah, I changed my mind pretty quickly on these things.
Bring a Scandinavian that understands hockey and soccer.
The classic devaluing after the breakup.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know We've all done it. We've all done it.
You know what? Yeah.
All right, let's get to the open.
Welcome to the open.
Oh! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, it's the open, and it is the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. And the latest on the Vancouver Canucks came from our Sportsnet colleague out east, Nick Kiprios of Kipper and Bourne fame, a Stanley Cup winner with those 94 Rangers. And he in the Toronto Star today reporting that it is possible the Aquilinis explore selling the Vancouver Canucks, to which you, Sat, reported on Twitter that is not the case. 5 hours ago, been told by Canuck sources the team is not for sale.
Yeah. And listen, I don't want to get into the whole dispute and reporting thing. Obviously, when something of that nature gets said like Kipper did, it's going to create a story in Vancouver. We're all going to look into it. And, you know, I was told by multiple people that this is not the case, that they're not going to sell the team.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as all the other things, obviously, you're always going to hear denials on any sort of allegations or accusals of personal relationships or issues or whatever publicly, right? But I'm not going to get into, you know, whether that's true or not, except to say the Canucks are adamant the team is not for sale. it has also created a lot of reaction.
I was going to say, there's 183 replies on your tweet.
Yeah, some would say that's a ratio.
Or almost. Your post on X.
And a lot of yelling at me, too. I'm like, what did I do? I'm just delivering the news.
And even Raymond, he couldn't wait for us to start talking about this because he's immediately texted in on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox and said, "Hey, Sat, how does it feel breaking our hearts by squashing the team being sold rumor?"
It's just the truth about what's going on. Now, okay, I understand people's frustration because we talked about this yesterday on the show too, about there's a lot of anger in the market. A lot of it is directed at ownership. People are looking at the tenure, they're looking at what's happened and they're seeing all the drama and they're pointing fingers and they're upset, you know? And I think fans have a right to voice their opinions and they're allowed to point the fingers at the person who is in charge ultimately, which is the owner of the organization. And when a team struggles and when the struggles happen the way they've had with the Canucks, you're going to be open to criticism. And that's just something you're going to have to deal with right now, right? But it's also a matter of what's real and what isn't real. The nature of any business is technically for sale for the right price.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to say that, you know, the Canucks are for sale, but in any business, there's always a price you're willing to sell your business for. The question when it comes to selling a hockey team in the current market is, if you're looking to sell a team, unless you have a real desire to sell immediately, where there's a level of desperation to sell quickly, this is not the time to sell your franchise if you're an owner in the National Hockey League. You have expansion coming up in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more teams added. And if the expansion fee ends up being $2 billion, which is what's being rumored, if that's what somebody's willing to pay, $2 billion to bring a team to a new market, then that's going to increase the value of every National Hockey team significantly. The baseline is going to be $2 billion at the very least. And if you're the Canucks or, you know, any team looking to sell, you're looking to sell well above your valuation right now. The Canucks are what valued at close to $2 billion right now?
That was some of the latest valuations of NHL teams. CNBC had it at $1.95 billion for the Vancouver Canucks.
And so that's your current valuation. In 2 years, that's going to look different. And what your valuation is and what it would take for you to sell are two very different things. I don't know. I can't speak for ownership and ultimately what the number would be for them to perhaps consider it.
Yeah.
But I just don't see it being something that unless somebody shows up and throws this massive Godfather offer as in like, here's an offer you can't refuse. Here's like $3.5 billion or something. Like, I just don't think this is a conversation that's in reality currently.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what's going to happen in the future. I don't think anybody knows. But I think if you look at it logically, too, with the expansion coming up, at the very least, you're talking about a couple of years before you start seriously considering anything here.
The Montreal Canadiens, Michael Andlauer, in 2023 sold 10% of his stake in the Montreal Canadiens so that he could purchase the Ottawa Senators in full from the Melnyk family after Eugene Melnyk passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And his 10% of the Montreal Canadiens was valued at $250 million.
Hmm.
That's a 2023.
So that's
$2.5 billion at the time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, more so than some of the reporting in those Forbes list, which, you know, they're nice to see and nice to look at, but this is something real, right? Mm-hmm. Versus what that is. And, you know, I think about it from the Canucks, they're probably in the 2.5 range, especially because of the building and where it sits in this city and how valuable that land is. So
it's very complicated. Like it's not just looking at it from, it's valued at $2 billion or something. There's more value, I think. There's more value to them mm-hmm. than what it's being valued at officially, so to speak.
Exactly. So this is one of those things where it's hard to put a hard number on it, but whatever it's valued at, the Aquilini's probably value at it more so than what ever those valuations might say. Irregardless, you know, this is a question about, I think, the fan base's confidence, level of confidence, lack of confidence in the ownership group. And, you know, the team had the magical run in 2010, 2011, and it's been spotty ever since. Right?
Yeah.
And sure, teams go through cycles, but this has been a pretty long cycle of
futility.
Yeah, for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
With a couple of exceptions here and there. But, you know, as I like to say often on the show, even a blind squirrel finds a nut. And that's kind of what it feels like for the Canucks. I mean, the New York Jets under Woody Johnson have figured it out a couple of times, right? James Dolan and the New York Knicks, they seem to be figuring it out more recently, but he's long been thought of as a bad owner and often too meddling of an owner. And whatever you might think about the Aquilinis and however they might like to be thought of around this city, it's pretty clear that the majority of the Canucks fans that interact with us and listen to this show don't have a high level of confidence, don't have a high level of trust in the way that the team is currently being run.
So how do you earn trust? Because you're right, the trust to me is the big thing. And it's funny because, you know, this came out today and last night I was, you know, watching hockey, watching basketball, thinking about the show, thinking about topics and what we're going to talk about, and just thinking about the overall mood with the fan base. And it's very clear that at least the fans that are online, at least the fans that interact with us on this show, and I'm not going to pretend that's the entirety of the fan base, but just, you know, from the ecosystem we live in, right, there's a lot of anger being directed towards ownership. And it's very clear that comes down to a lack of trust.
Yeah.
There isn't any trust. And I was thinking, like, how do you earn trust back? Like, is making a public appearance and saying the right things, does that change anything?
Nope.
Maybe in the moment you'll be like, hey, at least we heard from that person. I don't know if that changes anything. Does a new practice facility change things?
It helps.
Probably helps, right?
I think that's part of the issue here, is that there's a sense that the Canucks as an organization aren't being put in the best position to succeed. In the same way that we evaluate coaches, like, are coaches putting these players in the best position possible to succeed? The flip for that for an owner is, like, is the owner giving the team, giving the organization everything possible for it to have the best chance at success?
Yeah, and you can obviously point towards the practice facility thing and say that proves that they're not, right? But it's not as simple as that either at the same time, right? And we spoke about this with Woodley too, that yes, the practice facility matters, but you can't just say it's the biggest issue, and if you don't have this, like, you're doomed, and it shows that, you know, you're failing to help the team. There are other things that are involved in it too, but obviously it would go a longer way, but that seems to be a ways away. So I don't think you're going to regain trust, at least even partially, through a new practice facility anytime soon. That announcement's not coming anytime soon.
No,
based on what Rutherford said. So how else do you build trust then? Is it just winning hockey games? Because first it is
winning hockey games, but it's also, like, you know, for once in your life, sell at the deadline. Not that that means...
But is that on ownership? Or is, you know what I mean? Like,
it's not directly on ownership, but the perception is that it's partially on ownership because they're looking for the playoff gate revenue.
Sure, but I don't think... Again, like, this is where it's interesting, right? Because you could say, okay, what else can ownership do? And I'm wondering what ownership can do here, right? And it's not simple. It's about winning ultimately, right? Do you put a good team on the ice? Do you win? Do you have success? Do you keep Quinn Hughes long-term? I think those things would reflect a lot better, right? But in the moment, before we said, hey, bring a president in, have the buffer between the GM and the owner and stay hands off. Now, the truth is every single owner in the NHL is going to be involved.
Yes.
Obviously, Francesco is involved as an owner. It would be foolish not to think that he isn't. But I don't think he's involved to the same degree he was before. And as far as management goes, obviously, when you're signing a contract like Pedersen's, you have to get approval. When you're making big deals, you're always running by the owner. That's par for the course for essentially every single team in the NHL. That's not, like, you know, exclusive to Vancouver, right? But I don't think management was told not to sell a deadline. Like, that was their decision.
Yeah.
That was Rutherford and Alvin's decision not to sell those players at the deadline. It wasn't because they were told, hey, don't sell.
Yeah.
Like, so that was their decision. So you're right. I think that looks poorly.
But given history, there's always people that are going to draw the line towards the top of the organization.
And the bill always comes due.
Yes.
Right? Because right now you can say you're doing a lot of the right things. Obviously, there are things you can do better, like practice facility, other things. But you can say from a hockey ops perspective, now I'm doing the right thing. But the trust isn't there from the beginning.
Yeah.
It's all the other things that happened in the past. And for a while, you had success last year, before this year happened, and now those feelings are back again because they were never healed.
Yeah.
They were just covered. Mm-hmm. And now the Band-Aid's ripped off again, right? That was never solved. And until that gets solved by ultimately having success under this ownership, like sustained success, these doubts and these trust issues are going to continue. Like, this mood that we're seeing isn't going to change over the course of the summer.
No.
You know what changes it? Winning hockey games.
Winning hockey games, sustained winning, you know, years on years of winning, or at least a franchise that looks like it's headed in a sustainable direction. And that's just not the feeling around the Vancouver Canucks. Now, you know, some of this is like, if you're going to compare every team's budget in the league to like what the Leafs operate at as far as their staffing goes and the types of things that the Leafs do for their organization, that's just, it's not realistic. Mm-hmm. The Rangers are also known as a team that don't spare any expense for their players. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that the Canucks do, but every team across the league is going to have different budgets for different things. And ultimately, you've got to find a way to still build a successful team within those budgets. You can draw a line right now to the Vancouver Whitecaps, who have for a long time been hammered for operating on a below average budget in MLS, but they've finally figured out how to build a strong team while mm-hmm. working under that budget. In Major League Baseball, the Tampa Bay Rays have worked on a budget for years and have long put together competitive teams. So whatever your budget is, and I still think the Canucks' budget is very much in the upper half of the NHL, but you still have to find ways to make it work. And for whatever reason, the Canucks, how much of it is on ownership, how much of the blame pie goes to ownership and goes to those that have been running the hockey ops crew over the years, I think there's plenty of blame to go around for where the Canucks find themselves in right now.
Yeah, ultimately, you wear it as an organization.
Yes.
And the people at the very top are going to wear it. And I think that's just part of what's going on. And it just brings us, before we move on here, it's just the Canucks are currently not for sale. The Canucks have pushed back on everything that's been reported on what's going on with the team, that they're not looking to sell the team currently. I don't know what the future holds. Nobody does, like we talked about before. But don't expect to see the Canucks for sale over the course of the summer. No yard sale for the Canucks.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the Canucks Central, the playoff Central roundup. A couple of other notes on the Canucks. Kipper also reporting that Tockett's decision was based in money. Quote from his piece in the Toronto Star, the Canucks didn't reach a number that the Tockett camp couldn't refuse. So the Godfather offer wasn't out there for Rick Tockett, according to Nick Kiprios. I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse. No, nobody said that to right. to Rick Tockett. And I kind of feel like this is one of those semantics things. You know, we've talked about it. Tockett probably didn't get an offer that might be out there for him, let's say, from the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm pretty confident if the Flyers really want Tockett, they wouldn't be shy about giving him 5x5, let's
no.
say. Right?
So yeah, it's like, so like, I think, so it was reported that Tockett was looking for around $4 million from the Canucks.
Yeah.
It's been reported, and I'm also under the understanding that they met his demand, which was around $4 million, whatever the number exactly is. I don't think anybody knows the exact number, but it wasn't above and beyond.
They met the number and still got a no.
Yeah.
Ultimately, that's what happened.
Does that mean they should have offered even more? Does that mean they're cheap? You can draw your own conclusions.
The way it reads, like the way I read it when I see Kipper's report is, you know, the Canucks didn't offer enough money for Tockett to put his concerns to the side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can look at it from a Canucks perspective, like, well, do we want that in that case? So there's a lot of different ways that you can look at that from Nick Kiprios. Frank Saravalli reported that Adam Foote will have interest from teams as a potential head coach and is already being looked at for interviews for open head coaching positions.
Another guy with a good reputation, and people love Tockett, and I'm sure Tockett's been telling everybody how great Adam Foote is.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that helps too, and at least gets him more consideration. And we'll see if he gets a real look with the Canucks or not.
Yeah,
you know, that's one of the things that I find interesting here, because the Canucks have allowed him to go and explore other possibilities, and he doesn't have a contract beyond the season anyways.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where interesting to see if the Canucks are going to be one of those teams.
Friend of the show, Vince Mercogliano, reported that Mike Sullivan is likely to be the next coach of the New York Rangers, yeah, which is kind of what we expected.
Yeah, and Emily Kaplan reported that it's essentially happened now, yeah, and he's going to be the highest paid coach in NHL history potentially here. So it's
he's getting the Mike Babcock offer.
I don't know if it's going to be the same term.
Yeah,
but
something close to it.
It can be something close.
Babs got like what, $40 million, like 8 years, $5 million per with the Leafs,
something like that. It was like a long term deal, though, right? Like almost six per year or something. But this might be closer to seven for Sullivan.
All right, on to the playoffs and a couple of things here. Four game sixes tonight. Obviously, Leafs and Senators have already gotten game six underway as Ottawa tries to stave off elimination yet again. The Tampa Bay Lightning have been eliminated from cup contention. John Cooper is now, we're all wondering if he's on the hot seat after a third consecutive year of a first round exit for the Tampa Bay Lightning, who look like they started getting it back in a better direction, look like a true Stanley Cup contender, but I mean, the Panthers just, they're the best team in the league, I think. So it's kind of a tough spot for John Cooper and the Lightning to be in.
Yeah, it is. It's just, the question is just what do you do long term? Does everything expire at some point?
Yeah.
That's the only thing you wonder about, right? Because otherwise, you probably want to keep John Cooper. And the Panthers, I don't think this is the year you lost to the Panthers, who might be the best team in the league.
You lose to the Panthers, and it's like, well, we are SOL, I guess, because the Panthers are that good with how they structured their season and magically got Matthew Tkachuk ready for game one of the playoffs, much like the Lightning did with Nikita Kucherov all those years ago. The Montreal Canadiens season also coming to an end, and they were kind of one of the surprise stories, the way they finished the season, got into the playoffs. They've long been into a rebuild now, and you know, kind of like the Canucks last year, where it's like, oh, is this the start of a real competitive window? People are asking that question now for the Montreal Canadiens. I'm not sure I'm there yet.
Neither am I. And we even saw with the Canucks that had a more veteran team and had a even far better regular season last year. And you saw what happened the next year, and especially with young teams. And I think of the LA Kings, too, that made the playoffs in 2010, then missed in 2011. And then they fired the coach, and then 2011-12, they made the run, and then they took off, right? So you can see this even with teams that end up being, you know, relative mini dynasties even to some extent, or great hockey teams, that there are some ups and downs through the early stages. So I'm with you. I'm not confident in anointing the Habs as being there yet.
The most overused phrase in sports talk radio, or sports talk in general. Progression is not linear.
Yes,
it's progression not. Is not linear.
Now, we used that a lot, especially a few years back when the Canucks were drafting a lot high.
Draft day, whenever we're doing draft coverage, progression is not linear. You have to remember this with prospects. Progression is not linear.
Well, especially because when the Canucks would draft a guy in 2016, then we'd talk about him in 2018, but he had a bad year. It's like, well, you know, it could be up and down. Progressions, you know.
We may or may not have said this about Jonathan Lekker-Mackey in the past, or some others. Yeah. Jets won Game 5. They're up 3-2 on the St. Louis Blues. There will be no Mark Scheifele for Game 6. He will not travel to St. Louis. He was hurt on a hit by Braden Schenn or Radek Faksa, depending on who you ask. And there was no discipline for either of the hits from the St. Louis Blues players for the hits on Scheifele. The one in question was the one by Braden Schenn. Coming up, Eric Erlandson is going to join us covering the Tampa Bay Lightning for LightningInsider.com. His reaction to the Lightning's exit next on Canuck Central.
I was going to say,
there's 183 replies on your tweet.
A lot of yelling at me, too. I'm like, what did I do?
Why are you pulling me? I'm right.
Hitting the most important topics for Vancouver sports fans. The People's Show with Vic Nizar. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.